This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. Last month, Mayor Libby Schaaf of Oakland, California, told her constituents that immigration agents were planning to raid her city. Later that week, she spoke to reporters about her decision to issue that warning.
Just as I'm being criticized, I'm also being thanked. Thanked for standing up for the residents of my city. Thanked for standing up for our most vulnerable residents that often don't have a voice. I am hopeful that it gave comfort and security to many people in Oakland that this is their city that believes in keeping families safe and keeping families together.
That was Oakland Mayor Libby Schaaf. Now, fast forward to yesterday, Attorney General Jeff Sessions traveled to Sacramento and told lawmakers this.
According to Acting Director Holman, ICE failed to make 800 arrests that would have been made if the mayor had not made her statement. Those are 800 wanted criminals that are now at large in that community, 800 wanted criminals that ICE will now have to pursue by other means with more difficulty in dangerous situations, all because of one irresponsible action. So here's my message to Mayor Schaaf. How dare you? How dare you needlessly endanger the lives of our law enforcement officers to promote a radical open borders agenda?
That was Attorney General Jeff Sessions. He gave that admonishment at the same time he announced an unprecedented lawsuit against the state of California. The lawsuit targets what have come to be known as sanctuary laws, which protect undocumented immigrants from deportation. Plenty of states have sanctuary cities, so why sue California? And what does this mean for those of us who live outside of California? We want to answer your questions in this hour and hear your stories about how this whole legal fight over sanctuary cities and counties and states and laws is affecting you right now. So email us, 1A@WAMU.org, tweet us at 1A, or comment on our Facebook page. Joining us here in studio to discuss it is Evan Halper, national reporter for the Los Angeles Times. Before that, he served as its Sacramento bureau chief. Evan, welcome to 1A.
Good morning, Joshua. Thank you for having me.
Not far from Sacramento at the University of California, Davis, is Kevin Johnson, the dean of the UC Davis School of Law. He's also a professor of public interest law and of Chicano studies. Dean Johnson, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Evan, let me start with you. Before we dive into California, give me a sense of what the national impact of this particular legal fight could be.
It's a big impact because California is among several states that are pushing back against the Trump administration's crackdown on stepped-up deportations. And they're taking a particularly aggressive approach with these laws that the administration is hoping to enjoin. And other states are following suit. And where this case goes can determine a lot about the future of immigration law.
Let's get to this case specifically. This lawsuit from the Department of Justice is targeting three ordinances, as I understand it. Can you walk us through what these three California ordinances are, these laws in California?
Sure. There are three state laws, and they were passed particularly as a response to the Trump administration. When Trump took office and said he was going to really crack down on illegal immigration, California responded immediately with these laws. The first one, SB 54, what it does is it prohibits prohibits local law enforcement agencies from transferring custody of detainees in a lot of circumstances, unless they are violent felons or have a violent felony conviction on their record.
Transfer custody to ICE.
Transfer custody to federal immigration agents, correct. And in a lot of circumstances, a lot of deportations happen when ICE asks for a detainer request, and they come and go to a local county jail and pick up the person who's been arrested for any number of offenses. And what California is saying is if this person was arrested for something, they weren't convicted, it was a minor offense, they are not going to honor these requests, and they're going to release the person. Now, another law is AB 450, and what that law does is it prohibits private employers from cooperating with ICE agents unless they're required to by law. So if ICE agents, for example, want to get in a private place of business where they believe undocumented workers are present, the unless they have a warrant, the private employer is supposed to tell ICE, no, you can't come in here, and we're not going to let you look at these records of these employees. And the attorney general has put employers on notice that he will fine them up to $10,000 and prosecute aggressively if they cooperate with ICE when they're not required to by law. That law really irks the U.S. Justice Department because they say it's directly interfering with their ability to do their job.
So just to review, so we're not getting lost, there's SB 54, State Bill 54, which prevents the locals from transferring custody to ICE of people who are suspected of being in the country without proper documentation. That's SB 54. AB 450 prevents private employers from complying with ICE except under specific circumstances, more exigent circumstances.
Absolutely.
And the third bill?
The third bill was AB 103. And that has to do with these ICE jails or ICE prisons that have been set up by private companies in many circumstances in California. And there have been a lot of allegations of mistreatment of detainees in these facilities. And so California passed this law saying that the state is going to start inspecting these ICE facilities and also looking at the records of detainees in certain circumstances. And again, the Justice Department really takes exception to that. They say this is federal supremacy. This is the state interfering with federal law. And there have already been a few inspections and the ICE facilities have been put on notice that more inspections are coming and the Justice Department wants them stopped.
So the three laws, AB 103, which allows California to inspect privately run ICE prisons, AB 450, which restricts private employers from complying with ICE except under more exigent circumstances, and SB 54, which prevents local law enforcement from transferring custody of immigrants to ICE except under more specific circumstances.
Right.
Dean Johnson, this is getting into an area of the law that seems to be a little fuzzy. Immigration authority is vested with the federal government, but this aspect of sanctuary laws and sanctuary cities, that still is being fleshed out, isn't it?
I think that's a fair characterization. The bottom line is the federal government has the exclusive power to admit immigrants and to deport immigrants from the United States. And that is supreme law, the supreme law of the land. The Supremacy Clause of the U.S. Constitution makes it clear that state and local governments cannot interfere with the federal government exercising its constitutionally derived authority. The states, on the other hand, are independent sovereigns. They have power under the 10th Amendment to act autonomously, and they also have a duty and responsibility to protect all residents within the state. So here, what we have in this lawsuit is really a clash between the Supremacy Clause of the Constitution and the 10th Amendment. And here, what we have the states saying is that we have a responsibility to protect our citizens. We are not in charge with enforcing the federal immigration laws, and we want to distance ourselves to the extent possible under federal law and the Constitution from the enforcement of those laws. And what we're seeing now is sort of a number of lawsuits, including this one, that sort of try to draw the line between legitimate state exercise of authority over protecting its residents and federal immigration power. And I think we're likely to see more of these kinds of cases in the future.
And if I'm not mistaken, is there actually even a proper legal federal definition of what a sanctuary city or sanctuary law is? Isn't that part of the challenge of all this?
Well, I think that's precisely right. There is no such thing as sanctuary law under the federal immigration laws. And sanctuary laws often are used politically by political leaders either to say we're providing sanctuary to immigrants if you're a state and local government or to chastise state and local governments like Attorney General Sessions does when he says we have to limit these sanctuary jurisdictions.
We are speaking to Dean Kevin Johnson of the UC Davis School of Law, Evan Halper of the LA Times, national reporter for the LA Times, and with you about this legal fight between the Department of Justice under President Trump and the state of California over three of California's somewhat controversial immigration policies. We'd love to hear from you, too. What do you think of how your community is dealing with these so-called sanctuary laws. And for that matter, what questions do you have about the way the law works? Email us, 1A@WAMU.org, comment on our Facebook page, or tweet us at 1A. I know we have to pause momentarily, but here's a quick clip of California's Governor Jerry Brown kind of slapping back in response to the lawsuit yesterday at a press conference.
This is really unprecedented for the chief law enforcement of the United States to come out to California and act more like Fox News than a law enforcement officer. This is a political stunt. It's more like Fox News and what's going on in Washington. And it's not about the truth. It's not about protecting our state. It's about dividing America. There's been a lot of concern about people, foreign people, who sow division and discord. Now we have the Attorney General doing precisely that. This is a time to build bridges, not walls, to pull Americans together, not set us apart. And like so many in the Trump administration, this attorney general has no regard for the truth.
That was California Governor Jerry Brown speaking yesterday. When we come back, Evan, I'd love to get your assessment of what Governor Brown said and whether or not this really is, as he put it, more of a political stunt as we continue this conversation. Also getting lots of good questions from you. Kathleen tweeted, how much of California's need to stand against the raids pertains to agriculture's labor shortage? Those fruits and veggie sellers need field workers, and I love Governor Brown's honesty. We will get to all that and continue our conversation and get to more of your questions and thoughts in just a moment. I'm Joshua Johnson. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR. This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. We're talking immigration policy, sanctuary cities and counties and states, and laws through the lens of a lawsuit from the Department of Justice targeting the state of California. Discussing it with LA Times national reporter Evan Halper and Kevin Johnson, the dean of the UC Davis School of Law. Before we continue, Evan, I wonder what your thoughts were on what Governor Jerry Brown of California had to say, calling this more of a political stunt and saying that Jeff Sessions was acting basically more like something out of Fox News than a federal officer. What about that?
It was predictable, and it was characteristically defiant. California has this feeling that it's the sixth largest economy in the world. It's almost a nation in and of itself, and that it's not going to be told what to do by Washington. There's a long history of that in California, and of course, in terms of the merits of the suit, California has been filing a lot of lawsuits against the Trump administration and has been winning a lot of them. A lot of the environmental rollbacks, some of the other immigration policy, workplace rules. California has been able to impede the administration's ability to carry out its agenda. In this case, it's saying, you know, that they just don't think that the Justice Department has a case. Now, in this circumstance, California is the one that's in uncharted legal territory. And some of the places it has passed these state laws, it could be vulnerable.
Dean Johnson, what about that legal case, particularly from the Attorney General's perspective? One of our listeners, Kurt, wrote on our Facebook page, the Oakland mayor allowing criminals to avoid capture? That seems to be aiding and abetting. And then Kurt shared an article from Fox News with the headline, violent criminals among illegal immigrants caught in California raid derailed by Democratic mayor. Dean Johnson, what about the legal argument that Attorney General Sessions is making? Is it as simple as Kurt put it, that allowing criminals to get away is preventing the federal government from doing its job?
No, I think the issues are much more complex than that. And I would have expected more from the Attorney General at his press conference in talking about the lawsuit and the issues that were raised. The state does have legitimate interests in protecting its residents. Localities have those interests as well. The lawsuit makes some claims that will be decided in a court, and some of them are closer questions, some of them are less so. But the Attorney General, when he's talking about advocates of what he calls open borders, and there aren't any as far as I can really tell in the California legislature, when he relies on unsubstantiated claims that 800 criminals were able to avoid a raid in Oakland, which there's no evidence supporting that. And I think that the issues are real, and the issue of immigration is real for the nation. But in some ways, I understand fully Governor Brown's statement that, Attorney General Sessions' speech here in the lawsuit really was something of a political stunt, more appropriate for Fox News than an attorney who leads the Department of Justice.
Let me bring in another voice for our conversation. Joining us now from Sacramento is State Senator Ricardo Lara. He represents California's 33rd Senate District, which includes parts of Long Beach and L.A. County. Senator, welcome to 1A.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. I wonder what your reaction was when you heard about this lawsuit that Attorney General Jeff Sessions was suing California, particularly targeting AB 103, which is a law that you helped draft. What was your reaction to that?
Well, you know, I was extremely disappointed to see what, you know, the governor rightfully said was a political stunt. I mean, the fact is, Attorney General Jeff Sessions is claiming that we're somehow impeding ICE's work. And we could, you know, we're doing anything but that. What we're doing is actually in AB 103, for example, when it comes to immigration detention centers, we're actually implementing ICE's own standards for how you treat immigrants who are being detained in these so-called for-profit immigration detention centers. So what we're doing is trying to enforce recommendations that they're actually putting forward. And we're saying immigrants in detention centers should actually have access to health care, should have access to an attorney, and to be able to contact a family member to let them know where they're at, and food and shelter. I mean, this is what we do for people who are incarcerated in this country. And so the fact that, you know, one of the arguments is that we're somehow impeding in their work. What we want to do is be very clear that, you know, we're not impeding in ICE's work. What we want them to do is their job and do it correctly, and ensuring that we're protecting California's residents as we propose these types of legislation.
Well, but isn't it up to the federal government to decide how to do its job properly? I mean, when a state like California, as big a state as it is, most populous state in the union, sixth largest economy in the world, when California as a state, subordinate to the federal government, says, no, you have to do your job this way, not that way. Doesn't that give the federal government grounds to slap back and say, sorry, but you have to do it our way?
Well, you know, this is a point. The point is that if we are not going to allow them to use state resources and our taxpayer money, who clearly are against 2-to-1 for these hateful type of policies that only seek to discriminate and divide. And the fact that they're making assumptions that somehow there was 800 criminals, that's assuming that people like my mother and father, who have worked their entire lives in this country, are somehow criminals or bad people. And that's just not the rhetoric we're going to accept here in California. That's good for them in Alabama. That's good for them in Washington, D.C. But we're not going to allow that to happen here in California.
I think, Evan, before we bring in our next guest, we should be clear. We don't know what the provenance of that 800 number is. That may or may not be true, but we really don't know.
We don't. All we know is that the Oakland mayor warned people that she heard a raid was coming, and Sessions, or rather the ICE director, said that 800 arrests didn't happen that could have happened otherwise.
Let me get to a few of your comments before we continue. Kay is listening in Michigan, in Ann Arbor, where we just visited recently. Kay writes, although my hometown, Ann Arbor, considers itself a sanctuary city of sorts, the Ann Arbor Police Department does coordinate, even if passively, with ICE when they make raids in town. So in our case, the sanctuary city moniker is meaningless. Let's speak to another law enforcement official who has been dealing with this issue very closely in Fresno, California, in California Central Valley. We're joined by Margaret Mims, who is the sheriff coroner of Fresno County. Sheriff Mims, welcome to 1A.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
You met with Attorney General Sessions yesterday when he was speaking in Sacramento. Give us your sense of what he said and how it resonated with you.
Well, he very clearly pointed out that immigration enforcement was a federal responsibility, and that California, he felt, was with his lawsuit, was overreaching and getting into an area that was federal responsibility, not California responsibility, and California can't prevent federal law enforcement from doing their jobs. He stated that he clearly supports law enforcement and what we're trying to do, and I believe him. I think he was very sincere. And as sheriffs in the state of California, we really find ourselves in a very difficult position of being in the middle of state laws, which we're bound to obey, and federal law, which we're also bound to obey. And so when there's a conflict, it creates an untenable position for us to be in.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I did want to ask you, particularly because, you know, Fresno is, I think, one of the most important parts of the country that doesn't get enough attention. For any American who likes eating fresh fruits and vegetables, we should care about what happens
right.
in Fresno. And you are indeed dealing with state law, which sometimes conflicts with federal law. Our listener Kathleen tweeted earlier about an agricultural labor shortage and the need for people to just process the produce. How do you as a sheriff work through all of that? What are you doing to try to keep everybody happy? Or can you?
You know, I don't know that it's possible to keep everybody happy, but here's the conflict. We're talking about two separate issues. We're talking about the definite need, in which I support wholeheartedly, for immigration reform, to allow people that have something to offer to that can provide the work that we need done here in this area, as you pointed out, and to make sure that they can be here legally and do what we need for the work we need to be done, and for them to be able to earn a living. That's very important to us in this area. We need immigration reform. The sanctuary state issue is separate because we're talking about the state of California protecting criminals who get booked into local jails. That's a separate issue. And I resist that notion because to try and tell us that we cannot cooperate with our federal law partners, it just flies in the face of public safety. Why would we needlessly recycle criminals back out into our communities?
Evan Halper, can you talk a little bit about what's been going on before the Trump administration? This is not a new conflict for California. How has the state been trying to walk this line that the sheriff just articulated between proper comprehensive immigration reform and dealing with people on the street who may very well be violent criminals who are also undocumented immigrants? How has this gone up to now?
Well, there was a measure in 2013, I believe, predating the Trump administration and predating this SB 54, which the sheriff was just talking about, that did limit when local law enforcement, the extent to which they could detain people that were of interest to ICE, and that if they were done serving their time in the local facility, that they couldn't keep them longer. And so that sort of was a precedent. But SB 54 really stepped things up. And now it's only violent felons that can be transferred over to ICE. And the Trump administration rhetoric pushed California to really, it had sort of an uneasy tension with the Obama administration and ICE under Obama. But once Trump came in and said, you know, his priority was just to deport as many people as he could, California made it their priority to frustrate federal law enforcement in every way it could. And local law enforcement is, of course, now caught in the middle.
I'm Joshua Johnson. You're listening to 1A. Sorry, were you trying to who was trying to chime
in? Yeah, it's me. It's Ricardo.
Oh, go ahead.
I wanted just to
go ahead,
just jump in to respond to the sheriff.
Go ahead, Senator.
So, what, you know, you can't have it both ways. Like, the fact is that we're trying to lump in criminals, and the reality is that, and particularly in Fresno, what we're seeing, that it is a vital part of our economy. I mean, we feed half the country, and if you're thinking that somehow every farm worker that is working in the field is somehow documented, it's the furthest from reality. And so we do need immigration reform. But the fact is that we're seeing that nonviolent criminals keep getting arrested and then deported. How do you explain a woman who was simply selling corn and all of a sudden was arrested with a misdemeanor and ICE is waiting outside as soon as she got released? And so this is what we're actually seeing. And that's why we're ramping up these bills, because we know that it's not the violent criminals who are getting caught up in the system.
Well, but I think, Senator, there's a case to be made. I think there's a case to be made for many Americans that if you've entered the country without proper documentation, you've already got one strike against you. Someone counted as two strikes. And if you know you've already broken one law, and then you break another law, you're fair game for deportation, even if we could use you to benefit the agricultural economy. I mean, if not that, then what would you suggest that sanctuary communities be doing in the meantime so that they can honor the law.
I would say that sanctuary cities should be focusing on ensuring that the law enforcement are actually going after violent criminals and allowing the federal agents to do their job. The fact is that these are California county employees, and we want them to keep our community safe. And the fact is that if they're going keep on going after people who their sole purpose is coming to this country without documents, and the fact that they never committed a crime, which we're actually seeing that happening more and more under this administration, then we're saying that our priorities are not in order here in California, because we want a robust economy. These are undocumented immigrants are part of the economy, whether we like it or not, and help us become that economic juggernaut that we are. And so you can't say you're going after one, stereotyping everybody as being violent criminals. And two, we have to make sure that our law enforcement are actually keeping our community safe and not going after people that their only sole, issue was coming here without documentation.
Dean Johnson, I did want to use that as a way to get back to Dean Johnson from UC Davis, particularly in light of a question we got from a listener in Evansville, Indiana. Stephen writes, "Try as I might, I simply cannot understand city and state elected officials who want to protect those who've broken the law. Why should this country have immigration laws if they're not enforced? Why is it so trendy to create this special exception for people who violate immigration laws, starting by using the term undocumented rather than calling them illegal? Sanctuary cities and states are an outrageous insult to those legal immigrants who followed the rules." Dean Johnson, what do you think?
Well, there's a lot to be said there, and I don't know where to even start. There's no definition of what an illegal alien is under the federal immigration laws. There are people who entered without inspection. About half the undocumented population of 11 million people entered without inspection. About half of them entered with valid visas and overstayed their visas. They are not criminals. They haven't committed a crime. They committed a civil violation and can be subject to deportation from the United States. What I think is important to remember here is a couple points that have been made. One is state and local governments are focused on their residents, and we want state and local law enforcement authorities to focus on fighting crime and doing their best to ensure that our communities are safe. In some communities and some police departments, including the Los Angeles Police Department, has decided that one way of encouraging all members of the community to communicate with police officers, to report crimes, to be witnesses at trials, is to not inquire into the immigration status of people they come into contact with. Los Angeles, for example, has a special order 50 that makes it clear that police officers aren't supposed to be inquiring into the immigration status of people. And they do that not because they want to provide sanctuary to anybody, but because they understand that immigrants aren't going to cooperate with the police if they think they can end up getting deported, if they do cooperate with police. So I think it's important to remember that there's a legitimate function for the federal government. There's a legitimate function for state and local governments when it comes to immigrants. And different states can have different rules depending on the legislature of those states.
Dean Johnson, I know we're up against a break in just a minute. I'm sorry to cut you short, but one of our listeners certainly agreed with you on that last point. Ileana tweeted, "Before anything else, you need to challenge the use of the word criminal to refer to undocumented immigrants. Not every violation of a law makes you a criminal. If you fail to stop at a stop sign, drive over the speed limit, cheat on your taxes, you are not a criminal." Dean Johnson, I know we got to pause in just a minute, but let you finish your thought first, briefly.
Well, I think the important thing to remember, and this has been mentioned several times, including by the sheriff, is what we really need to help us deal with some of these issues is comprehensive immigration reform. We've been debating immigration reform as a nation for close to 20 years at this point. We don't have a path to legalization for the 11 million undocumented immigrants who live in this country. We don't have enforceable legal immigration laws, and we don't have many other ways of dealing with an issue that is troubling the state and the federal government.
Plenty more questions to get to before we end this conversation. Matt tweeted, "Can we mention how the federal government does not provide funding for the detention of individuals obtained by ICE, leaving the cost to the states? I think that is a point that doesn't get mentioned enough." Sheriff Mims, I'd love you to answer Matt's comment when we continue our conversation alongside State Senator Ricardo Lara, Kevin Johnson, Dean of the UC Davis School of Law, and Evan Halper of the LA Times. Much more to discuss as we continue this conversation. Stay close. Back now to our conversation with Evan Halper of the Los Angeles Times, Kevin Johnson of the UC Davis School of Law, California State Senator Ricardo Lara, and Sheriff Coroner Margaret Mims of Fresno County, California. Matt tweeted, "Can we mention how the federal government does not provide funding for the detention of individuals obtained by ICE, leaving the costs to the states? I think that is a point that doesn't get mentioned enough." And Jason added, "Seems to me that the federal government wants to retain its exclusive authority to set immigration policy, but doesn't want to shoulder the cost of enforcing those policies. Why do feds get to unilaterally outsource their enforcement obligations to the states?" Sheriff Mims, what's your experience been dealing with ICE, particularly as it relates to detention and enforcement? Do they help shoulder the cost, or do they reimburse it all?
Well, first of all, I want to address some of the issues that have been brought up. There is no law enforcement agency, including sheriff's deputies in Fresno County, that on frontline law enforcement enforce ICE policy, law, or ask about legal status. That does not happen here. What the focus of SB 54 and the issues that we're facing is once somebody commits a crime, is arrested, and goes to jail. So frontline law enforcement in Fresno County, as across most of California, does not get involved in asking any residents, any victim of crime, whether or not they're here legally or not. That doesn't matter. In fact, I help people be here legally if they cooperate with and report. I can recommend a U visa to allow them to be here legally for up to 3 years, which is a great tool for us. We need to make sure that we work with our community and victims report crimes. Now, as far as the funding, there is a federal program called SCAP. It's the State Criminal Alien Assistance Program that will reimburse local jurisdictions and for county jails for holding people that are here illegally. However, that funding has been restricted over the years. In fact, during the last administration, we went from being reimbursed from about $2 million to we're just less than $300,000 today. So over the course of time, that funding has been significantly reduced.
And Sheriff, I want to make sure I'm clear that SCAP funding, that's funding for people who, and I'm just trying to see if this is an accurate example, like say you arrest me and I am in a Fresno County jail and then ICE says, hey, hold Joshua Johnson because he's not supposed to be here in the country legally. We need time to go get him. It reimburses you for that extra time you're holding me. Is that it?
No, that is the whole time, even if you're in custody for local charges.
Oh, okay.
So, yes, we do not hold anybody beyond the time that they normally would be released. We don't honor the 48-hour holds from ICE. In fact, no sheriff does in California because we're opening ourselves up to liability. And, in fact, it's a due process issue. If somebody can bail out, they're allowed to bail out. So that's one reason why I actually invited ICE to work in our Fresno County jail so those people don't fall through the cracks.
Sheriff Mims,
we have somebody that... Sure, go ahead.
Well, I was just wondering, Sheriff Mims, I wonder what you are seeing as a law enforcement officer in terms of the way that other sheriffs are dealing with this issue across the country. I feel like, you know, depending on where you are in the U.S. listening to this conversation, this could feel very familiar or very alien, because it seems like everyone does this a little bit differently. What are you seeing from inside with your fellow sheriffs on how different parts of the country are figuring all this out?
Sure. I can speak in California. No sheriffs in the state that run local jails hold for the 48 hours. Across the country, you've nailed it. It is different all across the nation. Some sheriffs do, some sheriffs don't. There are some court precedents already. The first one was Clackamas County, Oregon, that said you can't hold someone because in the Constitution we have due process. You can't hold somebody just because. And frankly, that's probably a correct finding because our Constitution applies to people even though they're here illegally. They're afforded due process.
Jessica writes, I live in Montgomery County, Maryland, which is just outside Washington. I live in Montgomery County, Maryland, in a $500,000 home, half a mile from an MS-13 safe house that was recently destroyed near an MS-13-controlled neighborhood. MS-13, an extremely violent Central American gang that's made its way into the U.S. Jessica goes on to write, I strongly oppose the county designating itself a sanctuary. Many area residents have extremely liberal politics, but what I think they miss out on is that by and large, their lives are unaffected by the extortion and violence that plagues many of the immigrant communities they are trying to protect. They are enabling criminals to prey on immigrants. Those of us who live much closer to the gang activity realize the threat this poses to our community. Senator Lauder, what do you think of Jessica's comment? And then I'll come back to you, Sheriff.
Well, one is, let's be very clear, MS-13 was created in the United States and has been exported to Central America and completely has destabilized Central America. And this is why we're having this issue. So let's put the blame where it actually belongs, and it belongs in the United States of America because gangs are created here.
But Jessica is right in saying that MS-13 does prey on immigrant communities here.
Well, as somebody who actually represents and lives in an immigrant community, I could tell you that gang issue is not just relegated to MS-13. And again, it's this fine line that the president has been able to conflate time and time again, that somehow we're all criminals and somehow we're all part, as immigrants, we're all part of MS-13. And that is ridiculous, one. Two, you can't stereotype every immigrant as being a criminal or being part of a gang organization. And what we're saying in California is go after those gangs. Instead of going after the lady who's selling corn in the corner, or instead of going after the person who's actually dropping off their kids at school, like what we're seeing where ICE agents are literally outside of schools in my district or outside of courthouses where our own Republican Chief Justice has said ICE has no business in our courthouses because they are stopping from accessing justice for every California resident. So the thing is, we do have to go after the gangs. We do have to do something about that. But the fact is that we're continuing to conflate, and we've seen this in the president's state of the state, having victims out there that have been unfortunately victimized by gangs, and conflating that as part of the immigration discussion. And that's very different. What the federal government needs to do is actually get to comprehensive immigration reform, get those people that are gang members out, and assist countries that where they're not even coordinating as they're releasing these gang members in Central America who are terrorizing those small towns, and then people come up here to the U.S. to seek refuge, hence the unaccompanied minor situation that we had a couple years ago.
Let me give the sheriff a chance to chime in before we keep going. Go ahead, Sheriff.
Well, my deputies are on the ground every single day, and I know that people that are here illegally and commit crimes frequently, in fact, most frequently, commit those crimes against other immigrants that are here. And then they threaten them. Don't report because you'll be deported, which is sad. And it breaks my heart because all I want to do is keep my community safe. And so that it's absolutely accurate what your Twitter or e-blog or whatever was the email that was sent to you. Mm-hmm. Completely accurate. They do prey on those that are here illegally. And again, I want to reiterate that law enforcement can help victims of crimes be here legally by issuing the U visas or recommending those U visas. Also, when it comes to the jails, when I cannot communicate with ICE, for instance, if I know somebody is an MS-13 gang member and they've only committed a misdemeanor. So if they're in jail, I know they're a violent criminal gang member. The law prohibits me from talking to ICE about that person and saying he's a validated gang member. What's going to happen when they're released from our jail? They're going to go out and reoffend and prey on our community. For instance, some of the offenses that I cannot talk to ICE about with people booked in our jail is repeat drunk drivers, people who assault peace officers, serial thieves, animal abusers. Those are prohibited by California law for me in talking to ICE about, and it's a shame. How does that help me keep my community safe?
Smug Liberal tweeted, how is a state allowed to ignore federal laws? What if a state ignored EPA or OSHA? Can citizens pick and choose laws to keep and ignore? Evan Halper, I wonder, maybe kind of to that point, whether or not this fight over immigration between California and the Trump administration is the big fight, or if it's just the fight we've noticed. Is California fighting with the Trump administration on other major fronts?
Yeah, California is fighting with the Trump administration on everything. You know, climate change, environmental rules, workplace rules. Immigration is obviously a big part of that. But your listener's comment gets to the point that as these politicians are sort of relishing in this moment, you know, the resistance in California and the Sessions and the base and this fight is just great for cable TV. Why law enforcement is really concerned about this, because, you know, it sets up if California does pick and choose, as the listener says, in terms of where they cooperate and where they don't, it gives the federal government the opportunity to retaliate and say, okay, well, we'll decide where in law enforcement we're going to cooperate with you. I mean, there's lots of places outside of immigration where local law enforcement needs the help of the FBI. They need the help of federal experts to solve crimes. And if the Trump administration decides they want to recede some of that support, they can.
Allen in Gainesville, Florida writes, only the federal government sets laws regarding immigration. If California has the ability to say we won't enforce immigration law, then don't states like Arizona or Alabama have the ability to say they will overtly enforce immigration law, which the courts have said they cannot? This is no different, just on the opposite side of the pendulum. Dean Kevin Johnson, what do you think? Is this the converse of these same over heavy-handed enforcement issues?
No, I think it's absolutely different. And I think that it's important to remember that nobody is saying that the federal immigration laws should not be enforced. We might debate the wisdom of some of those laws, but we understand that the federal government has the power and the exclusive power to enforce the immigration laws. The question is how much is California and its localities going to be required to cooperate with the federal government in its duty in enforcing the immigration laws. In the California legislature has made it pretty clear that we are going to cooperate to the extent required by federal law, but we're not going to go beyond that. And I do think that in our federalism, with different states and different points of view, there may be some differences between the states. At the same time, a state like Arizona, for example, can't seek to nullify the federal immigration laws and to over-enforce those laws and to take federal law into its own hands. So I think this is very different, where we're dealing with laws dealing with the residents of the community, their relationship with state and local governments, and it has nothing to do with the federal government not being able to enforce immigration laws. In fact, the federal government has been very effective in enforcing the immigration laws, deporting during the early Obama years about 400,000 people a year.
Right. I'm Joshua Johnson. You're listening to 1A. One listener writes, I'm thankful that California is taking a leadership role against Mr. Trump's racist policies. As California goes, so goes the nation. Let's hope it applies today. Resist. State Senator Lauder, what's next for you? I know our time is running short, but what do you see as the next move in the state's push against the Trump administration on this regard, including possibly more legislation, or do you just kind of want to wait and see where this lawsuit goes?
No, we're actually going to continue to move forward. We've never really waited for the federal government to come up with any realistic policy that's going to actually help us address this issue. And just to just a quick note on what the sheriff was saying, and I appreciate her, you know, being caring for the most vulnerable of our immigrants. The other discussion could be turned about the fact that these hateful policies actually keep people from engaging with law enforcement because they are scared that they're going to be retaliated against and they're going to be deported. So this cuts both ways. The second issue is we've also are fighting the Trump administration on healthcare, and this is something that we're actually going to continue to push forward. We're going to double down on our policies, and I kind of resent the feeling that this is somehow politicians are taking advantage of the situation. When you're in my district and you have children come up to you and say, I'm scared that my parents are going to be deported, I'm scared that my classmate's not going to be here on Monday, those are real issues that are happening in my district. This is not a political stunt on our end. We want to make sure that immigrants continue to be incorporated into our society, that they continue to contribute to our economy. And this is real. Children should not be worried about if they're going to be deported or their parents are going to be deported. They should be worried about going to school. And that's unfortunately the reality that this administration has created throughout the state. So as you're asking me for the future, mm-hmm. we're going to double down on our policies. We're going to continue to move forward on climate change, healthcare, on education, and ensuring that our dreamers have a place in our society. And we're going to continue to move forward because California has gone here before with Pete Wilson.
Right, right.
Completely has dismantled the Republican Party in this state. And, you know, we've gone through this before, and we hope that this is just the apex of us now getting back to a place where we're more equitable and we're more caring for one another.
And Sheriff Mims, before we have to go, what about you? What is your next move as we wait for this legal fight to play out?
Well, I'm part of a law enforcement task force to advocate for immigration reform. And we talk about things like immigration reform is really important to us because we do need that community trust. And we're working for that right now. And I think that's the overarching issue that we just can't seem to make happen and we need. On the other hand, as a law enforcement officer, when it comes to criminal activity in Fresno County, I want to make sure that we don't unnecessarily recycle criminals back into our community. I do not believe that the immigrant community commit crimes at a higher rate than others. In fact, only about 3% of the 3,000 people in my jails have ICE holds. So I think that's a narrative we need to push too, that we do not have a jail full of illegal immigrants who are committing crimes. Only 3%. And that 3% is what I want to address, and I need to be able to work with our federal partners to do that.
That's Sheriff Margaret Mims, the Sheriff Coroner of Fresno County, California. Sheriff Mims, we really appreciate your time. Thanks very much for talking to us.
You bet.
State Senator Ricardo Lara represents California's 33rd Senate District, including Long Beach, parts of L.A. County, and Bell Gardens. Senator, thank you.
Gracias.
Kevin Johnson, the Dean of the University of California Davis School of Law, also a professor of public interest law and of Chicano studies. Thank you, Dean. Much appreciated.
Thank you very much.
And Evan Halper, the Los Angeles Times national reporter. Evan, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Do connect with us online at the1a.org. Click on Ask 1A to send us your ideas for upcoming conversations. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Joshua Johnson. See you tomorrow for the Friday News Roundup. This is 1A.